Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
The State of Louisville Podcast Network is home to From the Pink Seats Podcast, and it's powered by Kern's Corner. Grab the best chili and patty melt in the city, right in the heart of the Highlands.
You're listening to From the Pink Seats Podcast of the State of Louisville Podcast Network. Now, here's your hosts, Jacob Lane, Matt McGavin, and Vince LeCoco.
Second episode in a week, and for this episode, I'm really excited to kind of switch things up. We typically talk the on-the-field happenings, the news around the Louisville football program, the collegiate program, coached by Jeff Fromm. But tonight, we're going to specifically talk NFL, fellas. We all have our different allegiances in the league. Matt, we know you're a big Colts fan. Vince, obviously, having played with Lamar, obviously, Lamar's number one cheerleader to the point that you draft him. Even if you have the number one pick in a fantasy league, you draft Lamar.
I mean, I cheer for the Dolphins as well.
Yes, and then I was going to say, then you're a Dolphins fan. Me, I have no team allegiance. I cheer for my fantasy football team and my bets. That's where my allegiance lies. So if you're talking about we all love the NFL. We talked about it at length this year. There were some great stories from, if you just remember back to the happy hours of the year, Big Dom getting kicked off of the NFL sidelines.
And you got a shout out in Jason Kelsey's retirement speech. Was
man.
Did y'all listen to that?
It was, did he really?
I watched a lot of that and couldn't tell how, I thought a lot of it was satire, him crying. It took me a little bit to be like, okay, this is very genuine. But we talk NFL on this show.
Big mans don't cry like that often.
No, you're right. But it was just that, you know, it just seems like his personality to be, you know, really emotional and play a bit, you know. I guess that's it. So tonight we're going to talk NFL. We talked at length this year about Lamar Jackson. We talked at length about, you know, some of the other topics, some of the guys and their big performances. And then obviously we had Jonathan Grenard on the show last summer, followed him and his breakout season. But we are really excited tonight to welcome one of Louisville's own, who is now in the big leagues. And when I say the big leagues, I mean ESPN. And that is our friend DJ Bienemy, former Louisville Cardinal himself, track and field star and a former JUCO football player. How about that? Tying the show in here. He's going to tell his story more in depth. But he and I connected when he was still at school here in Louisville and was just starting to kind of go into the journalism route, maybe right after he graduated. And we have been friends ever since. He covers the Houston Texans for NFL Nation, which is kind of their network of team sites. And so this past season, he was down in Houston covering the squad down there and got to see their playoff run. You know, big year with new head coach and D'Amico Ryans, and then drafting C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, who both were fantastic as rookies. And then, of course, the emergence of guys like Nico Collins and Tank Dell. And DJ is going to be able to talk to some of the specifics about that, and that includes Jonathan Grenard. And so we'll talk with him about the Houston Texans. We'll talk about Jonathan Grenard. We're going to talk about Lamar Jackson. I know DJ has thoughts around, you know, the Ravens season, Lamar being an MVP, and then ultimately how things ended. We'll talk about Jair Alexander. We'll talk about Tutu Atwell, the legacy of Teddy Bridgewater. What's the kind of biggest story for you guys from this past year?
It's hard to deny now that the Kansas City Chiefs are a dynasty. I mean, Mahomes now has 3 titles in 5 years, back-to-back, and he's not slowing down. I mean, the dude's 28, and people are already having the GOAT debate, and he's probably got another 10-plus years of his career, 7 of which is that's probably going to be his peak. And he's only scratched the surface of his potential. And as far as Louisville guys go, I could say you know, Lamar and him winning MVP. And you know, obviously that's a big deal, but I'm going to go somewhere different. I was pleasantly surprised with how well Yaya Diaby performed in his first year with the Bucks. He started off the bench, looked really good in the first month of the season as a rookie, and then to the point where he cracked the starting rotation. And by the end of the season, he's like second or third in defensive rookie of the year odds. Like, he had a really good season. So I'm excited to see how he runs it back in year two.
Ooh, for me, Jacob, NFL wise, you know, for the Dolphins, it was, you know, Tua and taking that, you know, step. And I'm still in the camp of we cannot win a Super Bowl with Tua as the quarterback. I was very disappointed, as both of you all know, that they didn't pursue Lamar Jackson last year. But it is what it is with that. So Mike McDaniel and 70 points is cool, but when you can't get it done in the playoffs, what's it really matter?
Yeah.
For me, I mean, yeah, it's cool seeing Yaya do his thing. What's really cool for me is seeing guys that, like, I played with, Des Fitzpatrick in particular, like, still hang around in the NFL, still finding ways to make a living doing what they love, being able to play football and everything. And, you know, it seems like a place like the Steelers is a good fit for him, somewhere with a lot of structure. And, I mean, Mike Tomlin seems like, knowing Des, seems like his style of a coach. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to go off and be an all-pro Hall of Fame wide receiver or anything, but, you know, it's just nice to see guys stick and do well and, you know, continue living out that dream that you saw them chase.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool, man. That's a great point. And I completely forgot about Yaya Diaby. How dare me? Like, massive season.
Forget
for
about
rookie.
Yaya.
I don't know. That's a great point. But a great season, you know, this year, and looks to be a crucial piece for them. You know, they cut Shaq Barrett, who has been one of their best pass rushers for the last several years. So, I mean, you look at Yaya kind of stepping into that primary pass rush role.
So I have some, you know, upcoming football news. I know we're talking NFL, sure, but I'm going to be attending a, I guess it's not XFL anymore. It's a UFL.
Yeah, the UFL.
Yeah.
I'm going to a St. Louis Battlehawks game.
Nice, man. Yes. That's really
going to go
cool.
To a Battlehawks nice. Game. So my old the old recruiting coordinator, Dave Bowler, not sure if you all remember him, mm-hmm, works up there for the Battlehawks now. And, you know, this should be a good time going up there to see him. I'm excited to see a different, I don't know, see a different product in person, just kind of see what a minor league football, you know, kind of looks like. Cause there's plenty of dudes that don't make it to the NFL that still got good, you know, still have good football years left in them.
Yeah, man.
Just
yeah,
not at that, just not at that level.
There's a ton of Louisville guys that are playing in that league.
I mean, AJ McCarron is signed with the Bengals just last year as, you know, one of their reserve quarterbacks. So
yeah, I mean, and even all the way back to what was it? I forget what the name of the league even was, but you had PJ Walker, who's been the backup with Carolina over the last couple of years. He came from one of those leagues. I've lost track of how many there's been, but yeah,
I think it was the USFL that he came
that
from.
Sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah, I know we're getting off topic there, but I just we're talking football coming
football
up.
Football is football,
though.
As I said, man. Well, let's go ahead and let's jump into the interview. DJ will join us now, and we'll talk through the big storylines in the NFL, particularly related to Louisville football, and we'll see where else we end up. We get one of our own in here, man. A Louisville alumni. I love to see it. DJ Bienemy joins us tonight from ESPN, covers the Houston Texans. I talked a little bit about this in the intro, but I still, to this day, and again, you know this because this happens to you, but every time you're on ESPN, which I watch ESPN pretty much all the time, and during the NFL season, when the Texans are the storyline, you'll occasionally pop up on my TV, and every time it's the Leonardo DiCaprio meme where I just point, I'm like, I know him. Like, it is just like my achievement as well with you. But I say all that to say, welcome in. How are you, man? It is great to see you.
I'm doing good, man. You know, as I told you guys in the intro, I got a dog, and the dog is extremely excited. This is my first day with the dog, actually. I gave it the name, his name. So I got the, you know, that dog. The original owner gave him his name, Bentley. I decided to change his name to Eevee. Eevee, come here, because I like Pokemon. So here I am
I
now.
Can see
but
yeah,
yeah, but I'm good though, man. You know, just working and stuff. You know, free agency is right around the corner. Not looking necessarily forward to it. Free agency is always a crazy time. But you know, I'm happy to be back on the pod with you.
Yeah,
it's been such a long time. But as I said, we go so far back. It's crazy. Like all the debates we used to have about Chris Mack or Jordan Nora or like, you know, I guess like is Malik, Malik an NFL quarterback? Is he not an NFL quarterback? Or like, you know, Kanye or whatever. So much stuff that we should just debate about.
Before we bore the people to death about us, let's talk a little bit about you. And I know your story and the grind that you've been on the last few years. But for those who don't, just take us back to you arrive at Louisville, part of the track and field team, get your degree, go on to the next step. So what has life been like essentially since you've left Louisville, and how did you get to working at ESPN as a journalist?
Man, obviously, I graduated in 2018. It was not easy. My first ever, like, you know, any type of like journalism type of work was with a Nick Coffey and a Holly Lindsey on the radio at his former website. And, you know, I was just, you know, working and, you know, trying to write about stories, write about anything Louisville related at that point. But, you know, at that point, I was kind of writing more opinion pieces. I wrote a couple of features, one on like Dave Williams, the running back. I'm like, I know that's a throwback, right? Like
yeah, 2018.
Man. Yeah. Bro,
and I did.
That was one of my best friends in college. That's who I heard.
Yeah. Dave is great. You feel me? Like, we still follow each other on Instagram, and we still, like, you know, we DM from time to time. And I did a story on Landon Ipoku. I think that's how you pronounce his last
London.
Name.
Safety. London Ipoku.
Yeah, London. Yeah.
There you go. Yep. So I did a story on him. And, like, I remember, like, at that point, I was like, all right, I'm kind of, like, I know what I want to do, but, like, I knew the lane I was in, I wasn't going to ever be able to get to where I wanted to get to. And I knew I had to, like, all right, go to grad school. So I went to grad school, went to Columbia. That was a grind. Like, it felt like I went from, you know, those were just like a little what, education. But it felt like I went from, like, a Power 12 to, like, not Power 12, from a Group 5 to, like, a Power 5.
Like you hit the portal, like, and upgraded.
Yeah. I went from like the Sun Belt to like Alabama, SEC, going against Georgia day in and day out. And it was not easy. It was not easy at all. Like at one point, I get on probation, I almost got kicked out of school. But yeah, it wasn't easy. But then COVID happened. So, like, as you all remember, like, jobs were like flying off the market like hotcakes. Like, people were just shutting stuff down left and right when I graduated in 2020 of May. But, you know, I hung around, waited around, got an opportunity at the St. Augustine Records, which is in St. Augustine, Florida, And when I started working out covering high school sports, my favorite sport actually that I was covering was girls basketball. I really find, like, women's basketball a lot more entertaining. Like, especially on, like you know, high school, even college, more entertaining for my perspective, it's more skill. And that's a more fundamental thing like that. So I really enjoyed that. And I broke a really big story involving, like, Black Lives Matter, things like that. Like, the AD trying to make this one girl and her team forfeit because they were wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts. I wrote that story. And I'm getting an opportunity to cover New York Jets for New York Daily News. So I covered them for about, like, 14 months. Built a little decent following. Covering the Jets, there's nothing like it. Covering the Jets, like, their fan base is just so rabid. Like it doesn't matter what the topic is. Like, they're the type of fan base that could turn a punter into a star.
you getting into it with Jets fans on a near daily basis was so funny.
Yeah, I used to get into it all the time with them. And then, I was there about 14 months. And then, like, ESPN came calling. And then, you know, I've been with them for this July will make it 2 full years. And honestly, I haven't been at a spot that long outside of my stint in Louisville since 2013. Louisville, I was there, I want to say two years and, like, 3-4 quarters. But outside of that, from 2013, I've always been bouncing around. So ESPN in Houston is for sure the longest I've ever been, like, stationed in one spot in a very, very long time. So I've enjoyed it. Obviously, there's some ups and some downs, but for the most part, I'm happy to be here.
So now that you're in Houston and everything, you've obviously been covering, you know, my former teammate, John Grenard. What has it been like this past year being able to unlock him and get him, you know, fully healthy? I remember in 2018 when he got hurt that first game of the year, it was absolutely killer. And then, you know, he gets
comes back to Florida the following year and just has a phenomenal year whenever he's fully healthy. Right. So it felt a lot like that for you guys this year. So what was that like?
Yeah, no, it was cool, man, because, like, I remember last year. Because it's funny, like, at U of L, like, John and I, we didn't, like, we were at the, you know, we had the same parties.
Right, yeah.
Same spots. But we never, like, conversed. We never had a conversation at Louisville. And we saw each other, like, at training camp in 2022. It was like we had just, you know, it's like we had known each other for years. We dapped each other up, topped it up, We chopped, you know, tapped in with each other. Obviously, he gets hurt. He's not as healthy as he would have liked to be. Ben, but I knew, like, he what type of talent he had, because in 2021, he had 8 sacks in 12 games. I always pointed back to that, you know, he had 8 sacks in 12 games, and I thought he was going to break out in 2022. Obviously, that didn't happen, but he actually got our good guy award in 2022 because he was so great to deal with. He was always letting people come to the locker, always
that's not talking surprising. Up with everybody. I mean, that's the kind of guy John is.
Exactly. So he got our good guy award in 2022, and then this year, you know, we used to always chop it up week in, week out, game after game, almost if he had time after practice, we would chop it up. One person he really loved chopping up was one dude named Sarge. Him and Sarge, they could talk for forever. But watching him week after week finally tap into what we knew he could do was pretty cool. You know, like, there's a few, like, obviously as a quote-unquote journalist, I'm not supposed to be a fan of guys, but, like, I break the rules for guys like Gennard or Sheldon because, like, granted, I didn't go to school with Sheldon, went to Louisville. I actually went to school with Jonathan Gennard, and I want to see those guys do well. So it was dope seeing him parlay what he's going to be able to earn in free agency. He's going to be able to get over $20 million per year.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was able to parlay that, it's always cool to see people that you went to school with, watch their maturation, and see, like, all the work they put in finally come to fruition. You know, it's kind of like what I see with Jacob. I remember when I used to tell him all the time, like, Jacob, bro, you gotta have to leave Big Red Louie. Like, I see what type of talent you guys got. You're gonna have to probably start your own stuff because you're kind of being limited here. Like, it's just a pure writing aspect, the pure writing. Yeah. You guys have a lot more creative things that you guys can do. And now seeing where you guys are now is pretty cool. Yeah. And it's kind of similar like that with Gennard.
Yeah, that's cool. That's the first time I've ever been compared to an NFL player. So I would gladly take it.
Take it.
Let me ask this. And Vince, this might have been what you're about to ask, but I know that you know the game really well. What was it about D'Amico Ryans? What was it about John's role this year that just the combination of those two things that allowed him to kind of step into a season where he has, you know, essentially a career season, 12 and a half sacks. It was also really good in the run as well, which he's kind of developed into. So what was it about D'Amico Ryans and, like, the role this season that allowed him to kind of have that breakthrough?
So under Lovey, with the D-line, they were more like a two-gap. So basically when they come off the ball, they're going to catch a read, and then it's kind of like they're kind of holding the block so the linebackers can shoot through and make plays. Under D'Amico, it's kind of more one-gap, and they're just rushing up the field. Like, they're not catching a read, and they're kind of, like, just getting upfield, and everybody else is kind of reacting off of them. So that's what Jonathan Gennard's skill set fits, right? He's super explosive. He has really good bend. He can get off the edge. And obviously, like, he can has really good knockback. So that is the biggest difference for him. I always knew, like, if he could just stay healthy under D'Amico, he was going to be able to pop because he has extremely long arms. And when he can get the top of his rush, which D'Amico would call the moment of truth, with those really long arms, he could pull a lot of guys down. Like, I remember the Tennessee Titans game. Back when C.J. Sharp missed that game and Case Keenum had to step in, he had three sacks. And he had, like, a forced fumble where he barely even, like, he wasn't close to Will Levis, but his arms are so long, he's able just to knock the ball off of Will Levis's hand. But, yeah, so that's what I would say what it mainly was the fact that he was in a scheme that accentuated his strengths, which was the fact that he's really explosive, can get off the ball, has really good bend, and he doesn't have to necessarily think as much. Where as in the Lovey, when you come off a block, you know, come off the ball, you have to catch and read. And, you know, that thing they ran something called pirate. So you know exactly what the word pirate stands for in terms of defensive line blocking. I've had guys try to explain it to me, but it sounds like Chinese sometimes. So obviously he didn't have to do that under D'Amico. So I would say that's the biggest difference. Like, he told me early on, the difference between D'Amico and Lovey was the D-line. It's on the D-line to make the plays versus on Lovey, it's on the linebacker to make the plays.
Yeah.
That's what they did a lot in Satterfield's defense as well. Is guys caught a lot. They two-gapped it, and that's why your linebackers made a lot of play. I love that style of defense that you're describing, DJ, just because of the freedom it allows guys like John Grenard to go out there and be ball players. Defensive linemen are a very – especially in the NFL, that's a – you always win the battle up front. And, I mean, if they're winning it, I mean, your linebackers are eventually going to start making plays and – Man, you mentioning those long arms just brings like nightmares to my scout team days where I had to block my 5'10 ass had to block John Grenard when he's in a 6'7 technique. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know what you want out of me, coach. I can't give this guy a look.
Yeah. I remember watching him like against Makai, and it was like,
oh, those were some battles.
Yeah, those, you know, and like watching it, I know they had battles at Louisville, and watching them in, I think it was week 14 against the Jets, like, he basically took Makai's lunch, and like Makai apparently told John after the game, like, this felt like practice back at Louisville again. Because like what Makai's strength is, isn't necessarily, that doesn't necessarily play into what Grenard's strength is. And what his weaknesses is, that's what Grenard could exploit. So like it was kind of at times felt a little, I don't want to say unfair, because they're both in the NFL. So
John's very smart as well. John is a very smart football player. He knows how to adjust mid-play, mid-game. I mean, it's pretty fun to watch him.
Yeah. So, like, watching Grenard do his thing this year, it was dope.
And kind of staying with the defensive line, Sheldon Rankins, he comes over. And you mentioned earlier how this scheme under D'Amico versus Lovie, how it's more so on the defensive line to make plays. Right. Sheldon comes over. He kind of, I don't want to say was disappointing in his last year with the Jets, but I mean, it definitely wasn't up to par because of his injury and whatnot. But then he comes in, and not only does he make an impact, I mean, he's a regular disruptor. He had, a two-sack, three-sack game at some point in the middle of the season. I mean,
he did. Got a tutty, man. Big man tutty.
He did against the Titans. How does that relationship kind of impact one of that? What kind of – how does Sheldon kind of elevate the defense? And how does D'Amico's scheme kind of elevate him?
So for Sheldon, I mean, like, obviously he played with New York, and they run the same exact scheme from a defensive line standpoint. Like, it's the same exact scheme. So – it was kind of like riding a bike for him once he got to Houston. It was for him, it was just more about staying healthy. And again, like the Jets, you know, this is no knock to the Texans, but the Jets had a much deeper defensive line during his time in New York, especially in 2022, right? You had, you know, he got the ball. You had
Quinnen Williams.
You had JFM. You have Quinnen Williams. Obviously, you had Sheldon. You have Jermaine Johnson. You feel me? Like, Bryce Huff. Like, there's way more – Carl Lawson, there's just way more guys that they have. Not saying the Texans ain't have guys. They had guys, too. But, like, they're a little more thin on that aspect. So, he just got more opportunity, and he's able to make more plays. You know, it's funny. Like, a lot of Texans fans, they always used to do, like, the Will versus John Grenard thing. But in reality, like, they're like, oh, well, Will is elevating Grenard, or Grenard is elevating Will, because this guy has a double team or that guy has a double team. Oh, but in reality – from what D'Amico told us one time, was the reason why those guys are able to eat the way they were is because you had Malik Collins and Sheldon Rankins really disrupting the pocket and pushing it into the quarterback. Because, you know, if the interior of the O-line is collapsing, there isn't really much for where the quarterback can go. Like, yeah, they might be able to do a little dancing around, maybe Mahomes or Lamar or Josh Allen. But for the most part, if you can collapse the interior of the pocket, when the quarterback wants to, like, maybe drift a little bit to possibly get out of the pocket, now you're kind of coming right into Will Anderson, right into Jonathan Grenard. So Sheldon had a massive impact on what Grenard was able to do with some of the stunt game things that they were able to do, where Sheldon would loop around and then, you know, really, you know, create contact with either the guard and the tackle and then let Jonathan Grenard come straight through, Sheldon that is, and let Jonathan Grenard come right through. Or sometimes, you know, just really getting knocked back and giving Grenard a clear lane to be able to get to the quarterback.
We'll be right back after this commercial break.
From the Pink Seats podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Frankfort Avenue Liquor and Wine. You can find them at 2115 Frankfort Avenue, right next to the Manhattan Project. Full bar service and a full liquor store. Stop in there today and tell them From the Pink Seats podcast sent you.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
So moving on to Lamar Jackson, MVP, great year, phenomenal season.
Right.
But we have the playoff exit.
Yeah.
So let's start with the MVP. And how was that? What was that from your perspective? And what did you see Lamar, you know, take in his next step? To me, obviously, continuing to end the Lamar can't throw, you know, narrative,
right.
From your perspective, what was it like for you?
So, funny story. I'll let you guys in on a debate that I used to have with Big Red Louie going into 20. What was it? Going into 2019. So, like, I was pretty pessimistic about Lamar in coming into that year. We used to argue a lot. It was like 5-on-1. Obviously, I lost that debate badly, like really bad. Obviously, but you know, for me, it was always like I just wanted to see him be a pretty efficient passer. And then I knew, like, once he got that part taken care of, he was going to be like one of the best quarterbacks in the league because he's just so dynamic on the ground. So obviously seeing his maturation and seeing where he is now I'm almost one of the few guys that always have to defend him. People always talk about the playoff stuff and he's not that good of a passer and things like that, which sometimes it's just cliche-ish at this point when it comes to the passing standpoint.
Yeah.
But I remember covering the first game of the season in 2023 when it was the Texans versus the Ravens. Obviously, the Ravens kind of ran away with that. But Lamar actually was not good. He had a fumble. He had a pick.
He was on my fantasy team. We had a –
Yeah. He was not good that week. But, like, I remember watching that game. Like, I didn't think it had much to do with Lamar. I thought it was, like, the Texans secondary was just really, like, whooping the Ravens receiver's ass. Like, they were just kind of, like, kicking their ass. Like, Odell was getting locked up by Stingley. Steven was kind of locking up whoever's on his side, whether it was Rashad Bateman or Nelson Aguilar. And then you had Zay Flowers got off, but it was a lot of screen passes, a lot of gadget stuff. But then seeing him start to turn it on at the end, it's funny, like I thought like he wasn't gonna win MVP because I thought like in terms of the counting stats, he didn't have enough. Then the Niners game happens, then the Miami Dolphins game happened. And I'm like, all right, well, yeah, that was that, you know, like it was sealed and delivered, you know. So and then again, seeing him in the playoff game, it was like, oh, here we go again, right? Because like once they started blitzing him in the second quarter, I was like, oh, okay. Cause it's funny, like, you know, I had to talk to people around the Texans, like that was kind of their game plan, was like to speed up his clock. But I knew they didn't want to like show it too early. Because, like, I knew they didn't have much of a, this was the first to go start off with. They could play a lot of, you know, quarters, some three, some quarter, half. But then I knew, like, once Lamar was kind of doing his thing with that, I knew they were going to start the blitz. And I'm like, all right, what are they going to do once they counter that? And once the Ravens went quick game, it was over. It was once they went quick in the counter blitz, I was like, it was over. Like, because like offensively, the Texans couldn't do anything because Mike McDonald was absolutely a menace to anybody that had the Kyle Shanahan scheme. What he did to Kyle, what he did to Mike McDaniel, what he did to Bobby Slowick in week one. I'm like, man, the only guy that had success was Sean McVay, and that's because Matthew Stafford went on an absolute heater. Like, he was just making all kinds of crazy throws that game.
Yeah.
So, obviously, like, I know CJ Stroud is extremely talented, but I knew they're going to win this game. It's going to have to come down to the defense, keeping it close, and then hope that CJ could make a play at the end, which I think he would have been able to if, you know, it came down to that point. But obviously it did.
That's a fun topic though. Like, what was it like this year covering, you know, playoff team? It's hot, everything. I mean, the Texans were a very hot team this year. They were fun to watch. I mean, CJ Stroud was he's awesome. I mean,
yeah, he was fun to watch him out there when he's out there in the NFL. He's with the Kardashians now, man. He's a star. Man.
He's a star.
I saw him walk out of somewhere with
it was Amber Rose. Rose. That's who it was. Yeah.
But he was just giving her a ride, man. He was just giving her a ride. The they had never spoke prior. They had never spoke prior. His mom confirmed.
Somebody said on Twitter, like, I can't even blame, bro. He's just living out every kid's chat.
man, but to answer the question, man, it was dope. It was dope because, like, one thing I would say, like, CJ, he reminded me of Lamar in the sense of, like, people really gravitate around him. Because, like, CJ's one of the guys. Like, how, as you know, Lamar, from everybody I've heard and just seen him, Lamar is one of the guys.
Gets along
and
with CJ everyone.
Really, exactly. Like, CJ, it don't matter who it is. I remember there was a guy, Kurt Heinisch. Him and CJ had a bet about, like, I forgot what week it was, but it was Notre Dame versus Ohio State. Right, and, you know, just exchange T-shirts or whatever, whoever wins. Like, that's what they did.
I think I remember that,
Yeah. And the fact that, like, you know, he's doing that with basically a backup defensive tackle who's, like, basically – like, he's basically a fringe guy at that point. You know, he might not have even made the team, but, like, the fact that he's connecting with guys on that level lets me know what type of guy he is. Or, like, my favorite story to this day, because I actually like the guy, Austin Deckless, that's my dog. He basically was a backup offensive tackle for the Texans. Me and we built a relationship because we both were really into Rod Wave. Like, we both love Rod Wave. And CJ Stroud's ever first preseason start, he gets his lunch took. And he knows he got his lunch took. You know, like CJ Stroud was under pressure on like 60% of his dropbacks. And, you know, I think CJ gets sacked or whatever because like Austin got beat pretty quickly. And he's just like, he goes to the side, he's like, man, you know, he was down on himself. Said, my bad, bro. He's like, bro, you good. Like, you good. Like, just get him next time. He said, that's on me. I got to make him miss. Right? And, like, just bringing that type of confidence into guys, that goes a long way because, you know, because we've all played sports in some capacity. When we F up, we know what that feels like. But people are just like, oh, there you go. You botched this. And sometimes you just need that encouragement to get you back mentally in the right spot. Because we know sports is so much more mental than it is actually, you know, like the actual physical. Like, as you know, we used to always argue, me and Jacob, like Jordan Nora in like the biggest game sometimes would just disappear, right? You know, I would always defend him to this day. You know, I'm still always going to tell him because that was my guy. But he sometimes in like the biggest game would disappear for whatever reason. Nobody knew exactly what it was, but that was more of a mental battle than anything else. It wasn't like, the dude couldn't play or the dude couldn't score. Sometimes the pressure got to him. And sometimes you need a guy that can uplift you in that moment, which obviously, you know, CJ was able to do that for Austin. And I remember, like, there's one game where Austin had to step in because Laramie Tunsil was hurt, but Titus Howell was hurt, and he had to play against, the Steelers. And obviously you got TJ Watt and you got Alonzo Highsmith. And he gave up a pressure, you know? So, like, that just shows, like, when you breed that type of confidence into people, what it could turn into down the line. And that's probably my favorite thing about CJ. CJ can connect with everybody. And he doesn't necessarily think he's too big for people. Like, there's temporary times where I've gone in a locker room because, you know, when you cover an NFL team, there is an unwritten rule that you don't bother the quarterback in the locker room. You can have, you know, chit-chat or whatever. But for the most part, you kind of leave them alone. And there's been plenty of times like me and him have conversations where it's about our faith or whether it's about, like, football or things like that. And that just shows what type of guy he is, that he's willing to connect and talk to everybody. And again, like, there's never been a time where, like, I've had a story I'm trying to work on, and he's been like, nah, I can't do that. He's always trying to make time, even for if it's for like, hey, bro, I can only give you 3 questions. He'll still do it, you know? And I think that's probably my favorite part about CJ. You kind of see it translate onto the field where his connectivity, where he can connect with everybody. And obviously, he's a ball placement specialist. Like, he can put the ball wet. Yeah, he's a dog.
Oh, yeah.
He's a future MVP. That's a fact.
Yeah. No,
I remember, sure. I can't remember at what point in the season was, but he was, I think Ohio State was hosting Penn State, and it was like the game day game, and like he was their mm-hmm. guest picker. And you know the spiel, like all the guest pickers on game day. Yeah. They when they get to pick, they're like, oh, yeah, I like this team, or I watch this. They look good. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally every single game that he's asked to pick, like he's giving an in-depth breakdown, like a little football snippet guy, man. on the yes. team or a player yes. or literally. A certain matchup. And I'm watching him like, this dude knows ball. Like,
yeah,
he
exactly.
really knows ball.
Literally. Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, you know, just that, you know, just the fact that he can be able to teach other guys on the team and connect with guys through that manner. Like, I remember I covered Zach for, like, a year and a half. Like, Zach wasn't good at connecting with his teammates for whatever reason. You know, maybe he came from too much money or whatever. But, like, he couldn't connect with his teammates. Like across the board. Of course, there's some guys that like Zach. Like, I'm not gonna act like everybody despised him. I think, like, the perception about Zach was a little overblown in terms of how people didn't like him. But enough guys did because, like, there were guys that were actually on the Texans. Like, one specific guy – that swore by Zach, that loves Zach, but obviously that didn't go for everybody. But yeah, like that's one thing about CJ. He knows ball, he can connect with everybody, and obviously his talent is through the roof. So if he's an MVP by 2025 or 2024, 2026, I wouldn't be shocked.
No. And kind of switching back to like the Louisville guys, going away from the Texans and into the NFC mm-hmm. actually. Jaire Alexander. I mean, this guy at this point, one of the top cornerbacks in the NFL. I think as of right now, he is still the top paid cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah. Getting 21 per. Yep.
It seems like over the last year plus, like two seasons, the injury bug started to affect him a little bit. Like, I think he played in only 7 games or something. And mm-hmm. when he did play, there was only a handful of games where he really looked like the elite corner that we've come to expect. And it was even to the point where towards the end of the season, like, hell, he had that thing in where they go to Carolina and he makes himself a captain.
Yeah, I forgot about that,
suspended
man.
By the Packers. And then so he goes through and scrubs his Instagram and socials of the Packers. Obviously, you're not as in tune with the Packers, Texans, but like, do you, in your like professional opinion, foresee maybe a trade involving him at some point, or do you think this is just you know stuff that guys go through on a typical basis that maybe the public isn't privy to on a regular basis?
Yeah, I would say it's the latter, mainly because I looked at his contract over the offseason. I think like. Yeah, the Packers would have to take like a dead cap hit of like I'm actually pulling up right now. It wouldn't be cheap to get rid of him. The potential out is next year. Could the actual like extension money starting to kick in now? Like dead cap right now would be $27 million. They can get out of it next year. But you know it's just typical NFL stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like players are sometimes I don't want to say they're divas. That's a strong word. But like you know,
I mean,
if you work with NFL players, I'll say it for you, they're pretty divish.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's any players who are divas, it's corners and wide receivers. I mean, easily,
corners and wide receivers.
I still remember when I saw the news broke that Jaire got suspended for a game. I'm like, what the hell did he do? And then I heard the reason. I'm like, why?
That sounds like Jaire. Yeah,
you know, I'm like Jaire. Like the first thing that I think of when I think of Jaire is him doing that little chicken dance against Wake Forest.
Yep. That's so funny. I remember like because actually his line brother, he's a Kappa, is my best friend, and like I remember like I was like trying to do a story on Derek Stingley about like Derek doesn't really trash talk. He's already coming out of his shell. He's a little bit like it's more subtle now, but he's coming out of his shell. And I want to interview Jair. Jair said he doesn't do interviews in the offseason, but I want to interview him because I was like, because Stingley, like, Jair's one of his favorite corners. He loves how he plays. But obviously, the personality is so different. And Josie was like, Jair don't talk trash. I was like, what Jair are you watching?
Yeah, right.
What are we talking about? Jair is a trash talk. I'm like, he called Justin Jefferson a solid receiver.
Yeah, man.
Like, what? That's as much trash talk as it. You call Justin Jefferson a solid receiver? Come on, you saw what he did with Stephon Diggs the year before? Come on, man. Like, that man there is a certified trash talker. That's okay. But yeah, I think it's just NFL players being divas. You know how that goes.
Yeah, man. I've always wondered about the scrubbing of Instagram. Like, it's just hilarious to me how that's received on the other end by general managers. Like, if that creates like a firestorm in the locker room or whatever.
Nah, CJ scrubs Instagram at one point.
Nah. He ain't never scrubbed.
Not yet.
We're not there yet. Once he gets the contract stuff and they're not trying to get what he wants, then you'll get the scrubs. But yeah, like, general managers don't care about much of that stuff. Like, for example, like Steven Nelson, their cornerback, last year, he wanted a new deal, or just like a raise or whatever. He called his general manager a clown on Instagram, and he ended up getting a raise, like a $2 million raise. You know what I'm saying? Man, so they don't care. They don't care.
You got to get your bag, man.
Business.
Yeah,
business is business.
So I want to transition a little bit, and I want to talk about something that I think might hit a little close to home for you, being a Miami guy. You don't see this a lot, and that is guys retiring and going straight into coaching at the high school level. I mean, I guess who will step away and, you know, like a Philip Rivers, and will coach his son's team while he's waiting to see if there's an offer. But Teddy Bridgewater retires and immediately goes into coaching and returns to his alma mater at Miami Northwestern. Can you just talk a little bit about what the impact of that is on the community there? Like, to have that guy, and we've talked to guys like Javian Hawkins. We've talked to, Imani Spence, guys who are from that area who they grew up on Teddy Bridgewater, right? Like, that's who they looked up to. Obviously, Tutu Atwell broke, like, all of his records. But what is that going to mean to that community of a guy like Teddy with his stature coming back, pouring into the kids at that school? That seems like that – I mean, I don't mean to be cliche, but that seems like that's got the ability to be – kind of generational changing for some of these kids who are going to interact with him.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, Teddy is like there's – so you have Duke Johnson, who's a Miami legend. Teddy's right in that sphere. Geno's kind of in that sphere. Ja'Cory Harris is in that sphere. But, yeah, Teddy's, like, next level. I wouldn't say Tutu's in – like, he's not in the sphere of, like – and I think Tutu would admit that he's not in the sphere of, like, Teddy. Right,
yeah, Teddy. Sure. Is like, I remember those days where I'd be in the locker room with Tutu, and he'd be talking like just how highly these dudes would talk about Teddy. To Jacob's point, is
like Teddy is, as you said, like, he's basically part of the community. Like, he is the fact. It's funny. Like, my homeboy who also coaches football in South Florida, he's in for a lot of that. But he's pretty tapped in. Like, who's coaching where? Like, Teddy, when he was playing with the Dolphins, was also coaching semi-pro. You feel me? Like, he's, as you said, like, he's really big on, like, being within the community, things like that. And, like, Teddy is the reason why. He's a big reason why, like, there is a pipeline from South Florida to Louisville now, because Teddy is one of the first guys, like one of the higher recruits to go there, like, when he had offers from a plethora of other schools to go to, I don't know if you get Lamar if you didn't have Teddy, you know? Like, Teddy was that instrumental in terms of South Florida and in Louisville in terms of that bond or that connection or that pipeline. But yeah, like, Teddy's going to be able to, because again, like, kids, I know we see a lot of Cam Newton stuff. Like, obviously, I think it's something that's a little overblown, right? In the sense of, like, I think the majority of kids do respect Cam. I think, you know, the few times kids do disrespect Cam, it happens to get caught on video. But I think that most kids, when they see Cam, and they're going to his camp, they have that most respect. And I think it's the same way for Teddy in that regard. Because, again, like, you're seeing a guy who did it at the highest level. Same with Teddy. He might have done it at the highest of highest levels. Because, obviously, he was a Pro Bowler. Obviously, Cam was an MVP, went Super Bowl, da-da-da-da. But the fact that they got to the NFL and the amount of wisdom that they can bestow onto the younger generation, like, nah, like what Teddy's going to be able to do at Northwestern is going to be next level. Because, like, from what I've been told about Teddy as a football player, like, if Teddy had just a little bit more, like, pure talent that didn't get hurt, like, he could have been, like, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He just didn't have enough talent after the injuries, you know? So, you know, the fact that he basically spent a bunch of time as a backup, was able to learn from Mike McDaniels, learn from Mike Zimmer, learn from Sean Payton, learn from even Matt Rhule. I know Matt Rhule, you know, whatever, whatever. But, again, man, learn from Vic Fangio, learn from Drew Brees, Dan Campbell. Like, he's going to be able to – he's going to have such an upper hand on the competition. And he's at the West. The West gets all kinds of talent. Like, the talent there is next level. So, like, you know, it's going to be at times unfair.
Speaking of the talent in that level, Mario Cristobal still? Will the U ever be back? Will it get back to its glory days?
Well, if they can't make it sick with Cam Ward, then the answer is no. But they got good recruiting classes, so it's like, when is it, that's going to finally come to fruition? But, you know, it takes some time.
But, I mean, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't know how to take a damn knee down.
Like, imagine if they took that knee down. Like, what, like, their whole season goes completely different. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, like, I remember when you used to give me a lot of shit when I would say the same thing about Scott Satterfield.
Yeah. No, you know.
You know what's ironic? You know. Frank Ponce was the quarterback coach at one point.
Yeah.
Most schools.
That's funny. But Jacob, you know, I was never fully on the Satterfield.
Very much. Track. Yes. Very much.
But yeah, you know, I was always big on, like, I don't know about a Group 5 guy going to a Power 5 in ACC. Because when he got to the ACC, that's when the ACC was still, it's not what it is now. The ACC is a joke now.
Yeah.
But when he first got there, that's when you still had to worry about Florida State. You still had to worry about, that's when Clemson was competing for Natties. You still had to worry about Miami and Lurk. You had Mac Brown come in, and you knew he was eventually going to turn it around. Syracuse was oddly, you know, occasionally, you know, they always had like 1 or 2 years where they finally, like, the pop quarterbacks and be good.
They always had a good white scrambling quarterback.
Exactly. So, like, I always, you know, when Sat came, I was like, I don't know about that. But then the first year, you know, they get to the day, they go to.
We had lightning in a bottle, like we like to call it.
Yes, lightning in a bottle. And obviously, it was never a lightning, you know, that bottle was never ever. Took again, but that's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay. Hey, man,
it worked out for us.
That Cincinnati doing his thing.
Yeah, that's right. Supposedly. It's not us anymore. So, okay, I want to end the show on this question here. We just had the combine this past weekend, and it was a big weekend for Louisville because you had a guy in Isaac Guerriendo who was, for the most part, Louisville's backup until the late part of the season when Jawar Jordan went down. And Isaac came in from Wisconsin, was seen as kind of this power back guy who was going to come in, maybe be, you know, like a third down back, and really was a speed guy all along. But what he did at the combine with a 4.33 40, running back. Now he's on the radar. Xavier Worthy obviously broke John Ross's record for the fastest 40 time. That's not what I want to ask you about, okay? I know well enough what you believe about Usain Bolt in terms of his greatness in all-time landscape of athletes, right? So I saw this tweet. I'm sure you saw this. That said that if he ran a 40-yard dash, he could do so in about a 3.8 or a 3.9. Do you agree with that? And what would Usain Bolt in the NFL be like for a quarterback?
I think he could probably go – he'd probably go like 3.8. I think it was what he's saying, since he's so tall, like, it might – obviously, he could get going. He just have to, like, end his drive phase pretty early and just tap into his top end fairly fast. But, yeah, he could for sure go, like, 3.8.
It's just stupid, man. That is just – I don't think I can do anything in 3 seconds. Like, not anything.
That's good if you can't do anything in 3 seconds. What's it called? Because I remember at the Super Bowl like a few years back, he ran like a 4.22 and like sweats and joggers, like joggers and shoes, like a 4.22. Yeah, like and that was later. So the fact that he could do that, like,
you know what I see, DJ? I see 6'5", and I see a lot of untapped size. I am pumping him full of cheeseburgers, steaks, calories, protein, and we're going to tight end. That's a mismatch nightmare right there.
So here's the thing. The only guy that's really been able to be like track fast, like really, really track fast, like that could, if they wanted to compete Olympic wise, that could compete, that was able to change his football field, was Tyreek Hill. And because it's turnover, he doesn't need that. He doesn't have long strides. He has this crazy turnover. Usain on a football field wouldn't have been that good because for him to tap into his speed, he got to use his long stride. And if you jam him up, throw him off his, routes, you'd be able to, basically evaporate him. So I don't think he would have. And he doesn't like to get hit. So yeah,
I don't blame him.
Usain Bolt would have. Usain Bolt would have. Mine. So it's weird because I never ran it like laser.
Yeah, right.
But when I was in JUCO, before I even took track full time, I caught a 4.3. I remember it was after practice. I had my dog Dom clocking it. I was coming in at a 4.3 multiple times. I had a couple 4.4s, whatever. But obviously, I think if I would have ran during my peak of my track, I could have maybe got 4.2. Maybe. I'm not gonna say I would have got 4.2, because 4.2 is still moving.
It depends. While you were there, Bobby Petrino was there, and we ran all our 40s on a track with track spikes on. So you probably would have been.
I heard about some of those times because Jair used to always want to race. Jair wanted to race me sometimes.
He was 4.2, 4.3 every day.
Yeah. And he was I'm trying to race you now, DJ. I'm maybe.
Man, I ran a cool 4.91 in those track spikes, so you can imagine what
that's
I can
good,
run.
Good, man. That's good. Going sub, I don't think people realize if you can go sub 5, you're faster than 99% of humans. 99% of humans. You might not be faster than 99% of football players.
Yeah.
But that's okay. when we do the media combine for the Texans media or whatnot, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, well, hold on. We're so jealous.
Media combine champion over here, man. Your athleticism being put to work out there for you. Two times. Sorry, let me put a little respect on you.
You feel me? But like it's so funny, I'll see them running, they're running so hard, and they're coming in 5.3, 5.4, 6. I'm just damn, I chuckle because it's we criticize and we talk bad about these athletes.
Yeah,
they can't do this, they can't do that. Whole time, I can't even obviously, I think this year, I should go 4.6, but I've been going 4.8 the past couple years. I can't even come close to my old athletic peak right at this point in time. But it's just funny because we have all these opinions, but we can't come close to what these guys can do athletically. So it always tickles me. Obviously, the game is the game. The business is the business. But it always tickles me that is the reality, that the majority of people talking about the athletes, I'm talking from media space, we can't, even as the former players, right? They're retired, so they can't even do what they used to do. So I always find that
get a kick out of dudes Shannon Sharp. He's a big one where he'll be like, oh man, if I go out there, I'll put up numbers right now. It's some of those older guys that still got the confidence and swag.
My favorite is Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
No one can cover Chad Johnson and Chad Johnson's eyes.
No.
Yeah, exactly. The only guy that I think could still go out there is T.O.
T.O. probably could. He was playing in that arena league, the fan control football league, three or four years ago.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
Incredible. All right, well, that's going to do it for the show tonight. DJ, I can't thank you enough for joining us, brother. This is a great time. We've talked NFL all season long, but it's great to have an expert who can come in here with a little bit of some Louisville knowledge and talk about it. So thank you for your time, brother. And best of luck to you and your dog, man. It seems like
you
guys got a nice bond. Just
your dog's already better than Matt's dog. Made way less noise. It's crazy how you get it one day and your dog makes, it's incredible.
He's being
click and he's already here.
Yeah, man. I love this. Well, DJ, take care, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, no problem. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, that will do it for the show tonight. A big thank you to our friend DJ Bienemy, former Louisville Cardinal, now, as he mentioned, covering the Houston Texans in the NFL for ESPN. You can find his work at ESPN.com, at the Houston Texans blog. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Bienemy. And you can check out all of his work again at ESPN.com. Big thank you to all who have listened over the last couple of days. We've had a busy week, and we will keep the ball rolling into next week as we prepare for spring football. And until then, go Cards.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.